to Curmudgeon's Corner. It is Friday, May 9th, 2014, just after 2 UTC. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is back with us this week. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Sorry for last week,
we were talking a couple weeks ago. Was it better or worse than the place you were in Florida? I mean, I know at the time of the show you were actually driving or something, but
The town has 15,000 people. There's not really much in it. I will say this. I ate better in Scottsbluff than in Jacksonville. Because there were not that many chain places. There was actually... Okay, I need a coffee. There is no Starbucks.
You had found a local place.
I found actually a local little place that the only one in town that... Mm-hmm. Made espresso, cappuccino, whatever, or something.
Yeah, right, right. Those kinds of frou-frou coffee drinks, yeah.
And it was quite lovely, okay. I'm going to say. Quite lovely place. Okay, number one. And we actually went to this mishmash of a steakhouse with a sports bar kind of a thing that had quite an original theme. It was local. It was not a chain thing. Mm-hmm. And the food was actually, the AT&T coverage was better since okay. I had no coverage in Jacksonville. At least I had Edge in Scottsbluff.
Okay, so you had voice and really, really crappy data, but that was better than nothing.
You know what? I forgot how slow Edge was. I mean, I had, you know, when those little, like, Sam knows that I've always had some of those data cards for the laptops, okay, when they're around. So I had a few different ones. I had a Sprint PCS. I went through a couple of different ones. And at one point when I switched to AT&T, I got one of their Edge cards. And, I mean, I used it on my laptop for work. Okay, all right.
And we're basically talking like a 2400 baud modem or something at this point.
No, it's faster than that. But Jesus, not that slow. But good Lord, more like one of those 52 kbps modems.
Okay. Yeah, a couple years further down the line.
Yeah. But good Lord, I didn't realize that shit was that slow. I mean, I forgot how slow that crap was. I don't know how I ever got anything done on those things. I mean, I was just...
There was a lot less to come down the pipe at that point.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I drove through a blizzard.
Oh, that's cool.
Unexpectedly. I mean, I had to drive in order to get to Scottsbluff. I drove from Denver, and I had to cut a corner through Wyoming, get near Cheyenne, and as I'm closing there, the winds, there was like quite a lot of weather events last...
Yeah, there were tornadoes, there were snowstorms, there was heat waves, everything.
In Denver, Wyoming, and Nebraska were strong winds, 50-mile-an-hour winds, not stopping, all day long. I mean, it was... Look, you open the door to a car, and it flew open like you were in a storm, okay? Right. It was just crazy. So... As I'm cutting through Wyoming, it starts snowing with 50-mile-an-hour winds. I mean, it's a freaking blizzard, okay? And I'm like, what the? I was with somebody in the car because actually when I got to the airport, one of the guys that works with me, he got there at the same time. And I said, because originally we hadn't talked about our schedules. And I said, well, shit, let's just take one rental car for God's sakes. So, you know, we took one and just went. And all of a sudden, we were a little bit unnerved by this because it's really coming down. Fortunately, it only lasted for about 10-15 minutes, okay, and it stopped, and we were able to get out of that. But I was quite concerned that I was going to be stranded somewhere in between Wyoming and Nebraska in the middle of freaking nowhere.
That would be fun. That'd be fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did get a small SUV. I actually, originally, when I got there for whatever reason, they thought that they were doing me a favor by upgrading me to a pickup truck. Exactly. And I'm like, oh, we're going to give you a pickup truck. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
Well, what person in their right mind wouldn't prefer a pickup truck?
I guess. Right. Okay. So I guess that normally quite a lot of people that go to Colorado like getting upgraded to a pickup truck, except me. So, yeah, I was really irritated with Hertz, which last couple of weeks has been like failing miserably at getting me a car. Okay. That I actually anywhere nearly like.
Uh-huh.
So then their other option, well, we'll give you a Nissan Versa. And I'm like, wait, okay, what the? I mean, what am I in the Twilight Zone? Wait, first you give me a pickup truck. Then you want to give me a car that I can't even fit our luggage in because we're two guys of us, right? Our luggage wouldn't even fit. I'm like, okay, you know, really? So they finally wound up giving me a Ford Escape, which was actually quite good. But not without some... So anyway, yeah.
I rented one of those, well, not a current one, but like years and years ago on one of my random trips, I rented a Ford Escape.
They're pretty good. You know, no, that was actually a good truck. I mean, I like the little Escape. So, yeah. So
was, I was going off into wilds of northern Quebec with it. Yeah.
Well, so anyway, so that was like, you know, so I got back and then I went to Dallas and then I got back.
So.
Like last night, so.
So
apparently I am going to be going again to Scott's Bluff.
Oh, exciting. Exciting. Well, now you know where to get coffee.
Well, I do know where to get coffee and I do know where to get a decent meal. So that's good. Okay. All right. So that's not a bad thing.
So we do have a real show planned. We're going to talk about Lewinsky. We're going to talk about the Republican primaries that happened in a couple places. We're going to talk a little bit about net neutrality and we're going to talk about those kidnapped girls in Nigeria and the U.S. intervention there. But before we get to all that, I have a story too.
Oh, boy. What'd you do?
And so now this relates to the Mother's Day present I got for my wife.
But it's not Mother's Day yet.
It's not Mother's Day. That's Sunday. So I'm not going to reveal the actual substantive details here. Not that she ever listens to the show, but just in case, you know.
Just in case somebody else goes and spills the beans.
Yeah, you know, you never know. So look, this is just an example of stupid online shopping here, okay? So first of all, there's a thing that I know she used to have an older version of it, and her older version died, and so she's wanted a new one since then. But there's been a question of like, you know, which one and when would it be in the budget and all that, blah blah blah. So I decided, you know, to get it for her, and after I asked her a few some questions about what she wanted and what she didn't want, and she was of course completely and totally unhelpful. You know, without, you know, and I was practically saying, okay, I want to get this for you. You know, do you want this one or that one or this or that? And, you know, completely unhelpful. So I'm like, thank you very much for that. you know, so, but anyway, I decided to go ahead and do it. And I went online and, you know, there was a special offer thing going on that let you, well, it was a special offer that gave you an extra little benefit if you bought it with the special offer.
Okay.
And it's a one-time use special offer. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll do that. And so earlier today, I went ahead and I clicked and I bought. I bought the thing. I bought a couple accessories for it. I'm all happy. I order it, blah, blah, blah. And I did that like at lunch over work today. And I get home tonight and I see the notice that the thing shipped.
Okay. It's good.
And I realize I ordered the wrong thing.
What?
I clicked buy on the wrong fucking thing. Now, I'll give you an analogy. This is not what the thing was, but it is similar to what I'm about to describe.
Okay.
Let's say I was going to get her an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been looking at the iPhone 5C and the iPhone 5S. And I decided on the 5S. And I went through the whole process and, you know, I bought it. And then I realized I'd actually hit the buy button on the 5C.
Ouch.
That is an equivalent thing to what I did.
Nice.
So, and then, of course, I realize this when I see the notice that the damn thing is shipped. So it's too late to cancel it. You know, and I'd done the, like, you know, the shipping to make sure it got here on Saturday and the whole thing. And I'm like, oh, crap. So, I ended up, like, Yeah, and I did not want to do this for budgetary reasons, but I ended up ordering the thing I actually wanted to order, and I'm going to return the other fucking thing. You know, and of course, you know, in the end, I'll get my money back, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I couldn't reuse the stupid special offer. So I'm not actually quite in the same position that I was. Also, I accidentally had ordered the cheaper one, so I'm actually spending more than I was anyway. You know, so...
I mean, you basically just completely screwed up.
I basically completely... And look, it's not like I haven't been online shopping for 20 fucking years.
That's my point. You could just completely screwed up.
And it's like... And, you know, to be fair, like I said, it's like the names were very similar. And I had been looking at both of them. I had both of them up on my screen at one point, and I just hit the stupid buy button on the wrong fucking one.
Well, I think, look, we have all done that. I mean, I gotta tell you, I mean, I've made crazy mistakes. I remember when I was a travel agent.
Yeah.
I kept like, oh my God.
You sent somebody to the wrong continent, didn't you?
I sent somebody to the wrong place or the wrong dates.
Yeah.
I mean, I would, you know, one of those things where you kept being programmed on like, I don't know what the heck, you know, it was just like maybe the destinations or the dates, and you would just forget about how to do it. I mean, and sometimes you're just on autopilot just doing it, then realize later, holy crap, I'm like, what the hell did I just do? I just shipped them off the wrong freaking place or date. I'm like, oh God, you know, now it didn't happen often, but it's just one of those, you know, days where you just...
Yeah, and you know, look, I can't actually remember the last time I did something like this. And I'm like, this was not like, you know, a $10 item either. It was enough of an item that I'm thinking about the budgetary implications of getting it. And I'm like, I bought the wrong fucking thing. And it's like I had the right one up. I had been looking at the right one a few seconds earlier, and I hit it. I went through the whole checkout process. You know, you got like five screens where they show you your
crop. I know. But sometimes you're just on freaking autopilot. You just, you know, yes.
I got the confirmation email. I'm like, oh, cool. My order's there. And I got home, and I'm like, wait, no, no.
Well, let me put it to you this way. Like last week, okay, all right, 2 weeks ago, when I was booking this trip that I went to Dallas, I had to cancel it and rebook it four times.
Yeah. Now, okay. I do want to make one correction because, of course, I'm anal about being correct. What I actually noticed was that one of the accessories had shipped. The main item had not actually shipped yet, but I tried to cancel it, but it was too far in the process. It wouldn't let me cancel it.
Yeah.
So actually just as we were starting to record, I got the notice that the damn thing actually shipped. Like, thank you very much. And of course I'll get the one I wanted. It'll arrive on time. I'll give it to her and blah, blah, blah. And she, then of course she'll probably be like, this isn't the one I wanted, but you know, that's a whole other problem.
I don't know. This year,
want the one I canceled.
We're on the cheapskate program over here this year. I mean, I'm like, right now, I've decided, I'm like, I don't know. So here's the way I'm saving money for Christmas, okay? We're stuffing money in an envelope.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Old-fashioned way. I decided to go all the way old-fashioned. We decided basically not to spend almost any money on freaking anything this year. And we're just like, I don't know, every time I get, you know, put 50 bucks, 20, whatever, just tossing it in an envelope, set the hell with it. All right. You know, that way when we get to Christmas, we're not like saying, oh my God, what the hell? You know, now after we blew all this other money on all this other shit, now we're going to spend this. No. All right. I'm going to take that cash and freaking go into the store. I'm freaking buying shit.
Yeah, yeah, no, I can see that, you know, and I probably, you know, I should probably be thinking more cost consciously about the budget this year too, but I'm like, you know, she's wanted it for a little while and blah, blah, blah.
She wanted, yeah, I mean, I think that this year, I think the last couple of years, she's gotten most of the stuff that she has wanted, and I, you know what, we really, you know, there's been other years where she's been, like, wanting, like, some one thing that she's like, this year she didn't have anything like that particularly in mind.
Right. And I'll tell you, my wife's wish lists usually really suck in terms of like actual gift giving stuff, because she puts like stuff on for the house. Right. And you know, that's not like a great birthday gift, you know, like here's a new mop. Congratulations. No. But I've sometimes done it anyway, because I'm like, it's what you put on your damn wish list. So like, for instance, for her last birthday, which was in February, I got her a power washer.
You got her a power washer.
And a couple other little things. But
I think you didn't get her like a rolling pin.
No, I got the power washer. Yeah, because she'd hit me with a rolling pin. I got the power washer. And today she used it for the first time on the outside of the house and apparently had a blast. So.
Well, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
Anyway, let's take a break.
Power washers are fun. I will say.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to use it yet. I'm going to probably use it this week.
You'll have fun.
She didn't do the whole house, so she did a little bit.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have fun with that thing.
Yeah, because like the house is getting like grimy and stuff on the outside.
It's time to
power blast the thing. So
there you go.
Yeah. So we'll this weekend. It's going to be sunny this weekend. I'm also getting rid of a bunch of stuff from the garage this weekend. So,
if
the weather allows.
By the way, just so you know, okay, last night, the middle of the night, the batteries on one of my smoke detectors started going beeping in my hallway, by the way.
And let me guess.
Oh, I got up at 2 in the morning, freaking took a ladder, freaking took that damn thing down.
As you know, I got the ladder to fix this thing. It's still in plastic wrap in the garage. I'll undo it.
But I at 2 in the morning, all of a sudden, I hear beep, beep, beep. And after like the fourth or fifth time, I'm like, oh, for the love of God, it just got the damn ladder, freaking took the damn thing
down. Okay, we've done 17 minutes on bullshit. Let's take a break and start hitting some real topics. We'll be back after this.
Information.
Okay, here we are.
Here we are.
And let's do the rolling dice thing.
Oh boy.
And as I've done the last week or two, I'm rolling a die with more sides than I actually need so that I get to make the little rolling dice sound more than once before I get an answer.
Okay.
But it came up kidnapped girls.
Kidnapped girls.
So I don't know how closely you've been following this. I have not been following it super closely. I've noticed, you know, I listen to the BBC often in the morning, so I was hearing about this during the time period where people were, you know, saying that the American media wasn't covering it at all. And then sort of over the course of a couple weeks here, it's slowly built up, and now you're hearing more and more about it. For those who don't know, the bottom line is there's a girls' school, I guess. Boko Haram, the group in Nigeria, came in. They kidnapped approximately 200 girls, took them off to who knows where. They haven't been found yet. They have claimed responsibility for it and say their intention is to sell them into sex slavery.
I'm still trying to understand. Okay, I mean, how could they religiously justify this again? Or is it just that they're just whack jobs?
I don't think there's like some wonderful religious justification that says this is what God wants.
I thought that's what the guy said in the video or something.
I don't know. Maybe. But if they do, they're still whack jobs. You know, I'm looking at an article here, you know, to somebody about the video that was put out from the Boko Haram leader, and they're like, they're the opposite of the, and this is actually a CNN report on CNN.com. His appearances on camera are opposite of the appearances of Osama bin Laden and blah, 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 because they're intellectually chaotic, and just, he looks sort of out of it and confused, and I don't know. I have not watched the video. Did you watch the video?
No, I mean, I only, you know, saw like a little bit of it that was played on, gosh, I have no idea what the hell network,
whatever
what the
you
hell
were
I was
watching.
Whatever I was watching, I think it was probably CNN. And I mean, the guy
it
was
can't
just,
be CNN if they were talking about something other than the plane.
Well, I actually, I think they finally stopped the wall-to-wall coverage.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
So anyway, I mean, it was just, he was just talking about how this whole thing that that they're not meant to be in school, that they're going to be.
Yes, there is this sort of opposition to women being educated.
Correct.
That is part of this, and that they chose them from the school. But, you know, when you see something like this, it's like part of that has got to be just an excuse. Because, like, okay, if you don't believe they should be educated, okay, pull them out of the school, terrorize them, do something to keep them from getting educated, blow up the school, for God's sake.
Right.
But, you know, kidnapping and selling them into sex slavery, that's more than just not educating. Now,
I totally agree.
Now I can sort of see the warped logic if they believe that the right place for women is married. They don't believe in this whole love marriage thing. They're going to put them into marriages where they will be treated the way they believe women should be treated.
I thought that that's what they said.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yep.
I mean, they, you know, yeah, they basically don't.
And this was no, like,
he doesn't believe that women have any right or say in any of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And this was, you know, this was not a sort of fly by night on a whim kind of thing. They came up to the school. They pulled them from their beds. They loaded them onto buses and trucks. They
right.
drove them away off into the hills, into, you know, an area that's hard to get to, et cetera. And you know, they believe they may have already actually taken them out of the country. So now, this is obviously not a good thing. Nobody's doing this, but like, now we've gotten involved. We're sending some advisors to help look for them. What do you think we're doing here? What do you think the, I don't know.
I don't know. Do we have intelligence on the group? Do we know?
I'm sure we do.
I'm guessing. I mean,
what we've said basically is we're going to share some intelligence. We're probably going to share some technological resources.
Right.
Like, try to locate stuff going on satellite or something.
Right.
I don't know. But what we're not doing is, you know, sending in any troops or anything like that. So I'm not sure, like, you know, I don't know what the odds are for these girls. I mean, of getting back any way other than they get sold off into marriages and maybe years down the line they escape from their husbands or whatever. And we start hearing about some of them.
Yeah, I know.
I put husbands in quotes, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, I just find it quite... I mean, I just... I'm trying to fathom what the hell is going on through these people's brains. It's kind of like the other day, and this was something that I thought about that I wanted to talk last week, but didn't. It's like, you know, there was this whole thing about this NBA owner who went on this racist rant. Yep. And he got banned from owning a basketball team anymore. And my whole thought was this entire... I mean, what the hell do these people go through, like, in their childhood and their education to turn them into these racist, hateful people, you know? Because maybe this isn't racism in terms of, like, black and white, but it's certainly a hatred against women. Mm. It's a treatment of like women like they are slaves. I mean, he's selling them as slaves. I mean, it's not that much different from selling blacks into slavery. I mean, what the hell makes these people think that's just? I mean, I guess, you know, a couple hundred years ago, people were taught that some other people were property, but in this day and age, what the fuck are these people being told or learned? I mean, how do they get these? I know it happens. I know they exist. I'm just trying to understand what the hell are the circumstances that create a person like this.
Okay, well, you got to separate these two scenarios. I mean, you got your racist basketball owner. He's old. He grew up in the times when segregation was still common in the U.S.
Sure.
In a family that undoubtedly had those types of attitudes, and they persist. And you know, those are the kinds of things where, you know, if you grew up indoctrinated into that. Certainly some people change and lots of people have changed, but it's hard. And so a lot of people end up, you know, stuck in those views, and they may learn over time that, hey, these aren't things that I should say in public very often anymore. But the views you were indoctrinated in as a child never really completely go away for lots of people.
Okay, I get that. But what about these bozos? These bozos are not that old.
Well, no, but on the flip side, they're not growing up in 21st century America. They're growing up, in small insular societies with very strong beliefs and very strong traditions. And who knows what else is going on. There's all sorts of other instability and blah, 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 and other dynamics that I have no idea of the details on, so I'm not even going to try.
I get it. So yeah, women shouldn't be educated, but you're selling them as sex slaves?
Well, again, and I think we touched on it before. It may be that, you know, that those are the words that we're using for it. From the Western point of view, but if the way they're coming at it is these girls were being wicked by doing things that women are not supposed to do, we're going to make sure they get into an environment where they're treated like women are supposed to be treated, and they act like women are supposed to act.
Okay.
I mean, and obviously I don't agree with any of that, but I'm trying to get into the head, you know? And of course there's also the question, and I don't know this, how much of this is any sort of sincere belief about anything versus how much of it is opportunistic, you know? Hey, we need some cash. Let's go grab some women to sell.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
And just to correct, I'd said around 200. It's really around 300.
Jesus, it's really? I thought that you originally said there were 200. It's almost 300?
So I'm looking at Vox.com, which, by the way, is new site, but for these sort of quick, high-level overviews of what the hell is going on in various things, it's actually very useful. They kidnapped over 300 girls. Some have escaped. 276 remain missing. They kidnapped 8 more this Monday. So the original kidnapping was on April 14th. They kidnapped 8 more on May 5th. And that's when the U.S. announced that we would send in some folks to help. Let's see. They just and there's a whole insurgency civil war kind of thing going on in Nigeria, too, that this is all a part of. They want to impose strict Islamic law. You know, they have these ideological goals, but like we said, it might be about money too. And he's threatened to sell the girls into slavery. But they may really just want to, be ransoming these girls off. So that's unclear. Their protests, you know, the Nigerian government's trying to do stuff, but who knows how effective they can be. The U.S. is trying to, you know, give some aid, but it's unclear exactly what that'll be. There's still, like, stuff going on. And, you know, my worry on all of these kinds of things is obviously I have no problem whatsoever with us being involved if we can actually be a positive influence. And
well, shit, if we can bring these girls back, I'm all for getting involved.
I have no objections. If we can bring them back, or if we can help in any significant way,
I'm all for it.
And it's all the danger with all of these kinds of things is, despite best intentions, we end up somehow making the situation worse.
I really, at this point, I gotta be honest with you.
How do you make it worse?
The fuck, we can make it worse.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, no, as long as we're just sending some advisors and stuff, I don't see how you can get it worse. If we were talking about sending in a bunch of troops, then I could see how we could make it worse.
I don't know about sending in a bunch of troops, but let's face it, I mean, I'm like, Jesus, stupid computer. I got like three computers going on over here. One of them went berserk. If let's face it, if we can send a SEAL team in to freaking retrieve him, for God's sakes, I'm all for that too.
Yeah,
if we got an operation,
if we had a good shot of success, I wouldn't necessarily.
I mean, I would go and get them rescued. I mean, I'm not talking about having a freaking like presence there for like 6 months. But if we've got intelligence of where they are, we can go and get them out.
As a general rule, I'm becoming more and more pacifist. But if you have a limited operation with a very good chance of success, where you have a immediate and distinct, you know exactly what your goal is, what you're trying to do, and it's in and out. Okay, I can see that. And I'm not all for massacring, you know, Boko Haram either. I don't want to get involved necessarily directly in that civil war, but if we can go in and rescue some folks, I'm for going in and rescuing some folks.
Yes. I mean, that's what I'm really, you know, focused on. I mean, yeah, I mean, if we could, I mean, I don't know if we can.
I don't know that we can. I don't think, you know, I think it would be, it would be an interesting scenario that got us there. And also, you got to be careful with this kind of thing, because, like, you know, these kinds of rescue operations, you know, have a high chance of ending up with the hostages dead, too.
You know, sometimes
they work out.
Sometimes they don't. I mean, there's been a lot of times where they've worked out too. I mean,
yeah. Well, and that's the thing. It's a toss up. It's a risk. You could go in there and you could successfully get everybody out safe. You could go in there, and the moment they hear you coming, they shoot all the hostages and everything in between, where you've got a crossfire battle and like a bunch of hostages die and some live. And, you know, it's a situation where you have a very unpredictable result. And yes, you could end up with a successful operation that rescues a bunch of people, but it's by no means guaranteed. And a bunch of people could die anyway. A long time ago,
there was an operation to turn into, I can't remember what the heck. Anyway, I can't remember it.
Yeah, there have been a number of rescue operations in the past. Some have succeeded and some have failed.
Failed.
I mean, well, you know, you can think of Jimmy Carter and Iran hostages. That was one that failed.
Yeah.
The hostages didn't die, but the rescue team, a lot of them did. Mm-hmm. And that was a disaster. There have been others where they've tried to rescue hostages and hostages have died in the crossfire and things like that. You just never know. And, you know, like I said, meanwhile, there's some where everybody's rescued successfully, or most people are rescued successfully. It's just a very high risk thing to take on. So, and you got to wonder, like, in that scenario, are you better off, you know, this is a really hard question. What is the gamble of doing that kind of operation, maybe losing a significant fraction of the hostages and rescuing some, versus letting them be sold or whatever and trying to quietly get them back later from wherever they get sold to?
Gosh, look, I got to tell you, I mean, not my daughter, obviously, but good Lord, if you're telling me my son sold into slavery or us getting him back a shot, I don't know, but I think I'm leaning towards, let's try to get him back.
Yeah, well, and like you
said, I mean,
it's a hard call, because let's say there's a 50-50 shot, 50% you'll get him back, 50% he's dead, versus let it go, 100% or close to 100% he's alive, but he or she is in slavery. and maybe you'll be able to get them back at some point in the future. Maybe. Who knows? And in the meantime, who knows how they're being treated?
It's a tough call. It's a tough call.
Yeah.
Gosh, I don't want to be in those shoes.
Nope. Me either. Anyway, let's take a break. Right. We'll be back with something else. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, here we are. Let me roll again. Here we go. Have to keep rolling. Oh, three, net neutrality.
Net neutrality.
So the
FCC keeps saying that all that everybody's saying that there's not going to be any net, they're backing off.
FCC says everybody's overreacting, but yes. The official proposal won't be out till the 15th, I believe, something like that. But from the things that the commissioner has said, he's basically said, look, we're going to still retain some ability to use our judgment, but we'll allow some things. And as long as people don't go crazy, but if anybody does try to go crazy, then we'll slap them. And basically the folks who are activists on the net neutrality side say, you know, that's not good enough. You're letting people have a big new in that they didn't have before, that, you know, once you open that door, you can't close it again. And what really needs to happen is you need to reclassify the internet service providers as common carriers instead of information providers. And because then you have a much stronger toolkit for regulation. But of course, you know, all of those industries are dramatically opposed to that, as is a good deal of Congress. That's a very difficult road to hoe too. But people aren't happy with the way they're reportedly going either. It's just a different group of people that's unhappy. A whole big raft of tech companies put out a letter saying don't do this, but without any specifics of what they wanted them to do instead. Sort of the backlash to this is starting. We'll see how it plays out. I'll tell you my take on this, and I talked a little bit about this a number of weeks back, but in general, I don't like heavy-handed regulation. I think the government does it badly. I think the government tends to fuck things up when they do regulate highly. However, what you've got here is the telcos and such trying to have the best of both worlds, especially the Comcast of the world, because they have the regional monopolies. They have the local monopolies. So you don't have real competition here. So, like, you know, in a pure unregulated world that you, that, you know, the ideal unregulated world, if Comcast starts doing something that's fucking annoying and giving less quality service and blah, 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 then some competitor is going to pop up and say, well, you know, Comcast doing this fucking tier thing where you've got, you know, the some websites that are faster than others and you have to pay for this or that, or they only get good, you only get good Netflix if Netflix pays them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Meanwhile, the new ISP comes up and says, you know, forget all that bullshit. We'll give you the straight out, unfiltered, you can get everything, and we'll compete on that. We'll compete on that on how we provide that access and the quality of what's provided to the end user, and for that matter, the quality of that's provided to the service providers as well. And just free for all, let's do it. But once you put those regional monopolies in place that say, you know, Comcast is the only player that's allowed in this town, or we have Comcast plus, like, some old DSL connection through Verizon or something. But very, very limited local competition. Then you eliminate all that benefit of that competition. And sort of the way I feel is, like, I don't really think they should have that local monopoly in the first place. But if they are given the local monopoly, the cost of that, I think it's a legitimate cost of that to put significant regulation on it in order to serve the public interest with that monopoly.
Well, look, I think almost no place has I don't know about where you live, but I know that I'm in a place where I have a choice of providers. Okay, all right? I have a few different choices.
I believe I have two.
Okay. Let's see. I have more than two, because I have...
So you are in an exceptional area, because yeah. Most places in the country have one realistic broadband choice. If they have two, one is so much better than the other, it's not really a competition. In most places, you really have one choice.
Well, which is to say, what we did over here is... I have a contract with a provider for our entire buildings. Yep. And we have we actually bought fiber. We got fiber laid from AT&T here, and basically, we basically just bought fiber from AT&T, and it's really going through a provider. So it's a very different thing what we did.
Well, and yeah,
so
and like,
we have full control over our, right, our network and infrastructure.
And certainly this is always the case. If you have the resources to do it,
right,
you can always get your own leased line directly from the backbone if you need to.
And that's exactly what we did.
But that's the thing that, quote unquote, the normal person, if you're, like, you know, just living in an apartment somewhere or have your house in a neighborhood.
Well, that's what we did. We have condos we did for the whole building. Right. Now, you can negotiate that when you've got, like, a bulk location.
Right. But if you're an individual, you don't have that.
Yeah, if you're an individual,
unless you have a lot of money.
I believe you have, I think it's two choices. It may be three.
Right. And some places certainly do have two or three choices. Most places have one.
Yeah.
And plus maybe satellite internet, but it sucks for its own reasons.
Satellite internet. It's just not there. I mean, the main problem
is latency.
Is latency. Yeah.
In any case, I think my take on this is, I've said before, I completely believe in the ideal of a neutral internet. And I think a lot of the value that has sprung up on the internet has been because it gave that level playing field. And Joe Blow could set up something that they had a creative idea and get started and not have to worry about all this shit. And I think that's very, very valuable. I would love to live in a world where government didn't need to be involved to enforce that. I think one way for government not to be involved to enforce that would be complete elimination of these local monopolies and let the market go crazy in terms of providing different alternatives there. And maybe that wouldn't work out anyway. Maybe the monopoly would just win, even if that was free. But since you do have those monopolies, I think the case is very strong that says, hey, we've given you a privileged position. And not to mention, the amount of government investment that went into creating the damn internet in the first place. But we've given you a privileged position. There is a cost for that privileged position, and that cost is that you live by these rules. And I think, and I'm okay with those rules being, you're a common carrier. You can't make decisions about that content. You be a dumb pipe, damn it. You know, I've said before, like, what I want as a consumer, I want the damn dumb pipe. You know, and I understand why the cable companies don't want to be a dumb pipe. The phone companies don't want to be a dumb pipe. But we'd all be better off if they were just dumb pipes.
Yeah, but here's the problem that we've got with the dumb pipes. Look, like somebody said before, what's the percentage of net traffic out there that's being used by Netflix at peak hours?
It's a huge portion at the moment.
That's the problem with the dumb pipe. I mean, I'm sorry, you can't have one provider that only charges like, you know, $10 a month, and they don't have to pay anything, basically hogging 25 to 30% of the bandwidth.
But that's
what we've got right now.
There are a couple things there that I think are completely reasonable. First of all, Netflix does pay to their immediate upstream provider. They just don't pay every link along the chain between their upstream provider and you.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, I think the other big chink in this armor that probably needs to go away is flat fee pricing for consumers for internet. I completely believe in metered pricing. I think it's legitimate that you should be able to pay by the bit for your internet. And if you're streaming HD 24 hours a day from Netflix, you should pay a shitload more than someone who doesn't. But then
it's almost like, you know what? Then what the fuck? Look. But I got to tell you something. I think there's a lot of users out there who would prefer to have their providers pay to the damn vendor for them to get their shit at a cheaper price than them, they have to pay by the use.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think a lot of people would like that.
Yeah. No. And again, like if you got government out of it completely, then let the market decide. Let different ISPs show up with different models of that and
Netflix
figure it out.
If Netflix wants to go and like pay whatever, a couple of $100 million to a couple of providers because in order to make sure that they can stream their fucking shit, fine. Let them.
Well, Netflix didn't want to.
but what I'm saying is if they want to, well, they need to in order to provide their service.
They needed to provide their service because after the court ruling on net neutrality, Comcast decided to show their muscle and intentionally slow down Netflix traffic.
Well, with a reason, because they were freaking using a third of their freaking bandwidth.
Or the other way to put that is that the customers of Comcast who wanted to watch Netflix were using that bandwidth.
Yes. So the question is, who pays? Either the end user or the provider?
Well,
it's just Netflix a question of how it gets paid.
Well, right, because Netflix is already raising their prices because of this.
Yeah, they
did. So in the end, the same people pay.
Same people pay. It's just a way of how it happens. That's all.
And how it's distributed as well. Like,
correct.
You know, because I recognize, like, you know, frankly, I said, you know, I like metered pricing. By God, I would pay a shitload more if I had metered pricing. Because right now, I'm freeloading off all the... I get a lower price because there are all those other people who don't use their bandwidth who pay for more than they're actually using. You know, and so I get the better end of that deal right now. I would actually probably be screwed. If I had to pay by the bit, you know, they probably wouldn't come out with pricing that would let me get away with what I'm paying today. My bill would probably go up considerably. And I wouldn't like that, but it would be fairer. I would admit it's fair. I'm constantly this network traffic coming out in and out of my computers all the time, you know. And we've got multiple people in the house who all do streaming video all the time, you know. So we're clearly on that end of the spectrum. But I admit it would be. But in meantime, so I'm getting the good end of this deal. But there are all kinds of people out there getting screwed, who are paying for a plan that is much, much, much more than they ever actually use.
Yeah.
And there are probably more of them than there are of me.
There probably are. Well, anyway, we're not going to solve net neutrality today, but I mean,
yeah. The actual plan will come out next week. Then we'll get people reacting to actually something they've read, as opposed to rumors and vague statements. Right. And then we'll see how bad it is, and we'll see how the lines line up. Because what you're going to have is it looks like you're going to have the content providers on one side. The Comcasts and the internet service providers on one side, and the internet services on the other side, you know, your Googles and your Netflixes and everybody else. And, you know, a lot's going to come down to which ones have the better lobbyists. And frankly, right now, that's the telcos.
Yeah.
Because they've been playing that game for a long, long time, whereas a lot of the, you know, the West Coast internet companies have just recently started realizing that, oh yeah, maybe we should do some of that, because, you know, they've got better lobbyists, and so they've been getting the better deal.
Yeah, I know. So, oh well.
But okay, back after this, and we'll finish up on some other stuff. Okay, we're back. So, only two things left on the list. I'm going to roll the dice again. Primaries.
The primaries. Now, so who got primaried?
Oh God! I have no idea.
I gotta tell you, I haven't got a clue.
So why are we talking about this?
So, I don't know. Because I wanted you to fill me in on what happened.
Okay, so look, I have not been following the individual races either.
You haven't been following them either. So what the hell are we talking about then?
Okay, let's move on. The very high level thing is that. In a lot of primary races, you had the sort of dynamic of Tea Party-ish candidates versus quote-unquote establishment candidates. And in most places where they were in competition this week, the establishment folks won. That's the bottom line here. Now, a number of articles, and I've tweeted some of these, have pointed out the fact that if you actually look at these people's positions on issues, they're very, very similar. It's not like there's really a huge difference there in terms of what they say their positions are on X, Y, or Z. The difference really is more the approach and the tactics used. And I saw a couple commentators say that basically the victory here isn't necessarily, you know, center right versus far right or anything like that. It's more people who've been around a while and have some experience and know better than to say stupid things versus
the Michelle Bachmans of the world.
Versus the Michelle Bachmans of the world. Versus the Sarah Palins of the world, who maybe have a lot of the same ideological things to say, but don't have the discipline to
stay on message.
to stay on message, and also, you know, to retain enough centrist credibility, I should say, that they have a shot in a general election.
Gotcha.
Like, even if they believe the same thing, and maybe they do, maybe they don't, there's undoubtedly differences, and significant in some cases, but it's the doctrinaire ideologue who says, this is what I believe, there is no compromise, this is right, and focus like a laser on those issues, but completely unwilling to budge or move or compromise or anything like that. Versus the sort of folks who may believe a lot of that stuff, but pick and choose their battles. Look at things and say, okay, which of these things can I get 50% plus one support on and actually get something done, versus which are the things that I can, if I jump up and down and say, I believe this. Okay. Yes, I'm representing my views, but I will lose. And it's more of the second type who know when to keep their mouth shut, know when to compromise.
Right.
And
no, not when to pull a Ted Cruz, basically.
Yeah. And I mean, okay. And I think that is actually, honestly, that's a healthy trend. But it's hard to say. Like, okay, I see the value of sort of the ideological pure guys. You actually, okay, you know what you're voting for. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You get what you see. Whereas the folks who sort of are pulling their punches are weasels. You know, and this goes on both sides of the aisle, by the way. Like, you know, there is a truth. There is a such thing as a true moderate who really believes, pick some things from the right and some things from the left, and that's what I believe. And, you know, there are definitely some folks who are in that category. Hell, maybe I'm in that category. But a lot of...
Hell, I may be in that category.
But a lot of the politicians who are, you know, are hedging your bets, like the way I was saying, they really do believe, you know, more further to the right or further to the left, they just are careful about what they say out loud to try to get the people who are in the middle to not immediately dislike them.
Well, but it's one of those things about getting things done that, in general, we all sometimes have certain views that aren't the ones that we can do everything with. Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't accomplish a lot. I mean, when you've got a room full of people and you're trying to agree on something, you have to, you have to give in to a certain extent to your pure ideology. Okay.
Or at least be able to ignore the things you disagree on in order to make progress on the few things you agree on.
Exactly.
Because you can take the most doctrinaire people on the left and right, and if they could put aside the fact that they're on opposite sides, quote unquote, there are some things that they could agree on and potentially do useful things on. Now, you know, on the left-right battle we have right now, part of the issue is, of course, that a good portion of the Tea Party-ish folks fundamentally believe that, you know, regardless of what the problem is, the right answer is not for government to do anything. So any blocking of action whatsoever is actually an advancement of their agenda. So they don't see it as, they don't see not getting something done as a bad thing. They see that as the goal.
Yeah, I know. But I don't know. But it's a politics of not getting anything done.
Well, you know, the full part of that is they may want to solve the problem, but in other ways that don't involve government. So stopping government for doing it is step one in making other institutions out there to pick up the slack.
Part of everything is like getting whether the government does something or not, or gets involved. I mean, I get that. It's part of the decision, but, there's a lot of stuff like, well, let's get an example like right now. The whole thing with Social Security, Medicare, and entitlements, right? Okay. I mean, nobody is willing to sit on a table and reach a compromise in order to solve it. I mean, nobody wants to move because everybody is like so hung on their positions. I mean, I don't know.
And of course, in those kinds of situations, any solution is probably going to be painful in one way or another.
Right.
You know, either reduce benefits or increase taxes. Nobody wants to bite either of those bullets, really.
Well, no, nobody does.
Yeah, and now, and you know, you'll get the Republicans say they want to reduce benefits, and you'll say the Democrat, you hear the Democrats say they want to increase taxes, but neither of them really want to do either of those things because they cause pain to their constituents. And even when they do propose something, like you have the Democrats propose tax increases, they propose some, but not enough to actually fix the problem. You have the Republicans propose cuts, but not enough to actually fix the problem.
Correct.
So, you know, nobody actually wants to bite the bullet and do what really would be necessary in order to solve the problem, which is probably raise taxes and decrease benefits.
Yeah. And but the problem is that you've got one group of people absolutely opposed to any cuts in benefits, and you got another group of people absolutely opposed to raising any taxes. So it's like,
Anyway, yeah. the whole issue here is how this affects the 2014 races. The one trend, and this actually, the fact that more establishment Republicans are winning in primaries actually lends additional momentum to the Republicans, which, you know, when we did predictions at the beginning of the year, you know, I said, look, you know, chances are nothing's going to really change. But the Republicans have been on an upward swing over the course of the year so far, and numerous people have predicted that they've got, you know, at least a 50-50 shot. Sometimes some people are predicting better than that of retaking the Senate, and an almost certain chance of holding on to the House. And so you are seeing some movement in the Republican direction for this year.
And yeah, but it's still early, though. I mean,
it's still early, but, you know, this is, you know, we're not talking 2016 right now. We're talking this year.
I know we're talking this year, but it's still early. I mean, especially these races, because a lot of the things about the midterms are about these elections turnout is always lower. Okay? It's a lot about who they've got to rally around, how many people get rallied around. And hey, if the Republican establishment is alienating the teabaggers,
and there's all kinds of local dynamics in these races as
right,
well.
Right. There's because everybody tries to paint it as a national brush, and it most of the time it has to do with a local brush. Okay. You know, it's like one of these polls that I just saw, like, flash, like, from Gallup that showed that, 30% of voters say they will vote to oppose Obama. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? You know, 3 in 10 registered voters say when they vote for a candidate in the fall midterm elections, it will be to send a message that they oppose U.S. President Barack Obama. But I'm like, you know, what the hell does that mean?
It means they'll vote Republican.
But so what? I mean, just 30. I mean, yeah, but it's. Well, I mean, but it doesn't really say much about. I mean, let's face it, to win, you need more than that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's about the number of dedicated diehard Republicans anyway.
Exactly. So I'm like, what the hell? I mean, so this poll for me tells me nothing. I mean, you know, if you're telling me 70% of the people, that's another story. But, you know, but that's not the case. I mean, don't tell me the Republican base will vote against Obama. Whippity-doo, big deal. Thank you for spending a lot of money doing a poll that really told me absolutely nothing. Gallup. Which apparently they're very good at that, since they couldn't even fucking call the elections, last elections anyway.
And you got to remember,
useless polling.
The overwhelming dynamic in these elections is just that incumbents win.
So they're only like a
very small subset of the races that are actually interesting, and most of those are because the incumbent retired or isn't running or whatever, and so you've got two new people running. Those are interesting ones, and then of those, only some are really interesting because they're really in competitive districts. And so there are really only a handful of races that really make a difference here. And, you know, like I said, there are a number of sites that are starting to look at those one by one and looking at what that looks like in each one of those districts, in each one of those states. And that's where, you know, like most of the predictions I've seen at this point for the Senate in particular are somewhere between a 50 and 65% chance of the Republicans taking the Senate. Which, you know, is more chance than anybody would have given them a year ago.
No, I do agree. And I mean, I think that, I mean, obviously the Democrats haven't done themselves a lot of favors, like with some stuff over the last 6 months.
No, especially not, like, at all.
Not at all. So, I mean, I know that that, I mean, I know that, that that's the case, but I think, you know, still 6 months on to go. I think there's still plenty of time for things to change a lot between here and there. And historically, they have. I mean, you know, 6 months is an eternity in these election cycles.
And, you know, I can't change my prediction. I made the prediction I made at the beginning of the year, and I have to stand by it, right?
I think,
even if there is a 60% chance of the Senate flipping or whatever, I maybe that's true, but I still think it's well within reason that, you know, I'll still be correct on my predictions.
Here's what I think. You take 6 months of a good economy. The healthcare thing is going to recede from people's minds, as it has been.
You keep
having.
Calling for that. I don't know. I think it's going to be front and center in November.
I think people may be yelling about it, but there's not going to be what happened like 6 months ago with a whole fiasco with a fucking website. Okay,
that's true. But my,
yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
And I never thought there would be that, but I think, you know, the Republicans know how to grab an issue and hold on to it, and they are certainly going to do so.
Well, they're going to grab to it, but I don't think that it's going to earn a lot of extra mileage with them,
because you think it's basically speaking to the converted, as opposed to the people in the middle who could go either way.
Exactly. I think by that time, the people in the middle will see that, you know what, healthcare in America hasn't come to an end. We're not fucked. We're whatever. I'm like, these guys keep screaming about it. I'm like, they're going to tune it out. Okay, I think I really do. And what, continuing to bang on Benghazi? I mean, seriously. I mean, I don't know what the fuck. I mean, the whole Benghazi. I mean, this thing about Benghazi is a fucking joke. I mean, this is like comedic now at this point. I mean, I've never seen.
Hey, there was a new memo last week.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah, I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, how long? I mean, you know what? I would guarantee you. You do an opinion poll right now, okay? You poll about 100 people out there. You ask them about Benghazi, and they're gonna be like, huh? What?
Well, and the basic controversy that remains now at this point is that the administration tried to make sure that their talking points right after this happened were spun in a way that was positive to the administration.
God. Which, oh, wow. My God. Jesus. Really? Oh, they didn't come out and just say, oh, they didn't have a whole bunch of people just try to say information in the worst light possible.
I saw one tweet, and I apologize for not remembering who tweeted this, but somebody saying, I can't believe that the Obama spokesman didn't come out on the Sunday shows and say, my God, Obama is quivering under his desk. He's so screwed. He has no idea what to do. He's confused. He's lost.
I'm like, really? This is what they're banging about on. I mean, I don't know. It's like retarded. I mean, I'm like, really? Really? We've okay. got
enough. Let's take a break. We'll be back and we'll talk about the other thing that's being dredged up from the 90s. We'll be back after this. Well, Benghazi wasn't the 90s, but you guys know what I mean.
Yeah.
We'll take a break. Okay, here we are. Last segment. Monica Lewinsky is back.
I read a whole bunch of the stuff about this week about her. And
did you read her actual article?
I have not. I didn't think it was published yet. I thought it was just excerpts.
Yeah, yesterday, but it's only for subscribers or in the print edition. Mm. It's not available online.
No, so
free.
I only read a little bit.
I've only read the summary stuff too.
But you know, so what?
Yes.
I mean, we're really still. I mean, I'm.
Look, the bottom.
I'm going to give her 100% on this.
Yeah.
I still can't fucking believe that they're fucking like crucifying this poor woman for that whole damn thing. And she's right. And a lot of people are right. You know, Bill Clinton, nobody gives a shit, like, whatever. So you bagged a girl, big deal, whatever. Bup, bup, bup. I mean, he's like, you know, everybody's very popular. Everybody loves him.
Yep.
Why the fuck are people not giving this poor woman a job?
Yeah.
Because of this. Fucking 50, how many years later?
Like, 20.
Almost.
More.
I mean, for real?
It was like, yeah, about 20 years.
And she has not been so, you know what? I mean, I'm good that she came out about this. She's not been out there fucking seeking publicity over
anything.
No,
and she mentions in the article she was offered millions to do various things.
And
you can imagine what those things were that she was offered. But
and she refused. And I'm like, you know, she went to get a fucking education, try to get a fucking job, and nobody would fucking give her a damn job because of this. I mean, you know.
I mean, look, the bottom line here, and I agree with you, from what she's absolutely correct here, that she, out of everybody in that whole scenario, she's the one who got completely fucked over.
Yeah.
You know,
I totally agree.
At the time and ever since. And she's also completely right when she makes the point that, you know, at the time, you know, all the Democrats were apologizing for Bill Clinton, blah, blah, blah. You know, people were talking about how she was an out of control slut, blah, 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 blah. You know, there was nobody saying, or very few people. There were some people, but it was the minority and you didn't hear it very much. You know, talking, you know, not about the high level politics, not about he lied, not about impeachment, but wow, what an asshole Bill Clinton is taking advantage of her, and what an asshole they are dragging her through the mud through this. Because she was absolutely right. Clinton's reaction and the whole thing, you know, before he got caught and even after, you know, he wasn't like, yep, it was a consensual relationship, it was a mistake, blah, 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 I apologize to Miss Lewinsky. He was, you know, he denied she existed at first when he had to.
Yeah,
admit,
I know.
When he had to admit she existed, it was very negative. And how look, there was no positive spin you could put on this. They tried to destroy her.
I get that, but the thing is, and I get that, okay, and like she said, and she even said it, you know, I know they were trying to defend the presidency.
Yep.
It's like, whatever. And you had a lot of people. I get that. But you know what? We're fucking talking like, okay, fine. The truth all came out. Everybody already knew what the fuck happened. You know, it was admitted. Why the hell is everybody still giving this poor woman a fucking hard time?
And you know, frankly, you know, even Bill and Hillary, you got to think at some point, you know, call the damn woman up and apologize. You know, it's been 20 years.
I know. I mean, what the hell? I mean, you know. Yeah. Sure.
I mean, for God's sake, even now, she put out the damn article. Bill, pick up the phone.
Just fucking apologize. You know? I mean, yeah. I mean, I know you probably at the time, I mean, you know, you're president and, you know, probably, you know, a lot of shit that was going through. I mean, yeah, I mean, OK, you fucked up. A whole bunch of people fucked up. Let's just, you know, just get this over with. But apologize to one. And when people stop freaking like treating her like she I mean, honestly, of all the people that we've had in scandal, we've talked about so many people. We talked about Snowden and other people and whatever, you know, about him as relations, whatever. You know what? She's probably one of the few people that have conducted themselves and probably the most, with the most decorum, with the most grace under incredible fucking ridiculous pressure, for God's sakes. Okay? Jesus Christ, give the fucking woman a break.
Now, having said all of what we just said, the other thing that keeps coming up is that this will somehow be used as ammunition in a 2016 campaign if Hillary runs.
Fucking great. Beautiful.
And
fucking Republicans. I mean, I'm just like, really?
I honestly, I'll stick to what I said the first time this came up a couple months ago. If they try this, it's going to backfire. Because there is this new angle that we could take about, you know, and this is the take I've heard from a lot of Republicans in the last week about, you know, war on women. Look what they did to Lewinsky in the 90s. Okay, fine. I can see that angle. But having said that, I think primarily with regard to Hillary, people look at Hillary as a victim of this. Even if Hillary lashed out and said negative things about Lewinsky, they're like, the woman was having an affair with your husband. You're going to lash out and say negative things.
Agreed.
You know, and that's like a natural human reaction, and people understand that. And people look at Clinton as a victim of this, a Hillary, that is, who at the time rose above it and was also fairly graceful about things and put her family first, and they got through it and they moved on, and she went beyond that and she became senator and secretary of state and presidential candidate, the whole thing. And I think the majority of people out there will look at bringing this up in whatever context as being a low blow. And it'll actually reflect more positively on Hillary as long as she reacts to it in a way that is sort of above it and doesn't get down into the dirt with it.
I think she's way past it. I mean, so yeah. I really don't think that this is something that.
I mean, the only reaction I can see from her, like, is if let's say this came up in a presidential debate, for God's sake, you know, she's going to roll her eyes and say, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Right.
Probably not with those words, but yeah. You know, and then people would, you know, agree with her. She's like, "Okay, that's done. It's 20 years ago." And, you know, if Hillary at that point said, "And we're sorry for what Miss Lewinsky went through," then kaboom, 5-point bump in the polls.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think this is a winning strategy. And I know they're trying to preemptively dig up all this stuff about Hillary. What I said last time we talked about this, by God, they're real things to bring up. They're real things that are bad about Hillary Clinton.
This is not one of them.
This is not one of them. Neither is Benghazi. Okay, and I'll one caveat on the Benghazi stuff. The stuff they're fixating right now on Benghazi in terms of the stupid memo afterwards and stuff is stupid bullshit. The one legitimate thing you could say is Hillary was in charge of security. And what were the failures that were involved there? But that's not what anybody's talking about.
No, they're not talking about that.
You know, and so I just think... And I know we're so early, and so people are just trying to find things that stick. But yeah, there's so many real things. Why are we talking about Monica Lewinsky, for God's sake? And also, a number of people have pointed out too, Monica coming out with this now is. I've heard people say both things. One, I've heard people say that this is basically Monica coming out and saying, "Hey, look, if anybody wants to talk about this, I'm ready to talk now. If anybody wants to talk, I'm available. You want me in your whatever? I'm here. Come talk to me." But I've also heard people say, "Look, by Monica getting this out now, whether this was her intention or not, she preemptively defuses this issue." Because whatever talking about this we're going to do, we're going to do it now. And,
agreed.
You know, and by the time we get to 2016, everybody will be like, haven't we been over that not only in 1996 or whatever, but also like in 2014? Of course, people have short memories, so.
I know, but I think you're right. I mean, I think...
And frankly, I think the second is the, you know, like, Let's talk about Monica now. And you know, the Clintons can figure out the right way to react to it now, deal with it, and, you know...
Look, I think, she had to come out and say something. I mean, I'm sorry, she knew she was going to be fucking used.
Yep.
I mean, if she didn't come out and say... Well, I give her credit for this. If she didn't come out and say something, all that's going to be out there is all the fucking people using her, you know, and abusing her for their own political gain.
At least it would appear. I think you're right here. Monica is being incredibly smart here. Like, you didn't hear a lot of this in 2008 because Clinton didn't win the nomination.
Right.
You know, if Clinton had won the nomination in 2008, you can be damn sure all this stuff would have been coming up.
Oh, absolutely.
But because she didn't, this sort of stayed in the background. Nobody really talked about all of these 90s scandals and things like that. You know, because, you know, for God's sake, we're going to hear about Vince Foster.
Oh my God, I forgot about Foster.
We're going to hear about whatever that land deal in Arkansas was.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the Whitewater.
Whitewater. We're going to hear about Whitewater. We're probably going to hear about the thing where Clinton was involved in some sort of drug transportation thing with Central America. I remember that. There was some scandal about that, too. Yeah, look. You were going to hear about all that crap, but Monica is absolutely smart that she started hearing some of this because some Republicans were already grumbling about the Lewinsky scandal.
I know.
And so she's taking control of the narrative. She's saying, if this is going to be talked about, I'm going to get then my fuck, story I'm gonna, out.
I'm damn straight.
And good for her.
Good for her. I do agree. No. I was like, I will say one thing. She looked good, by the way, the photo shoot. I mean, I was like surprised. I was like, I don't know. I haven't seen her like forever. She came out looking really good. I think she came out looking good, not just physically. I think people found that she, you know, how she looked, but it's just
her mental state.
Yeah, very much so.
And of course, she talked about how during the 90s she was suicidal.
Yeah. I mean, she came out looking very good in quite a lot of different ways. I think for the most part, I mean, the reaction for most people, unless you're just a, you know, for most people, I think took it very in a positive light.
Yeah.
As she came out. So.
I think we're done here, Yvonne.
Yeah, we're done.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. As usual, email me, abelsmay@abelsmay.com. Talk to us on Twitter. Yvonne's IMBo. I'm Abelsmay. And all the other crap we often say. Have a good week, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.